This is Local Color, distributed by Your Public Studios, a podcast dedicated to the artists, entrepreneurs, and social innovators using their talents to make Baltimore and the DMV a better place. I'm your host, Jason V, and on the show today,
Brian Bailey. Brian's trajectory in the art world is one many aspiring creatives would envy. A little over a year after pursuing his passion, he's monetized his talent, secured PR representation, and his calendar is consistently booked for events he's hosting or events where he's the talent. But behind his success is the relatable story of setbacks, doubts, and soul searching, all in the pursuit of his own artistic expression. I don't know about y'all, but I've been fired or let go from four jobs. The first was an upscale grocery store slash deli in Reisterstown. If you know, you know. The second technically wasn't a firing because it was an internship and I wasn't getting paid, but it still hurt. The third instance was my first job out of college, and hopefully the final time I was fired from a job was at a radio station down in Washington, D.C. That one wasn't as bad because I wasn't the only one that got let go. The station was sold to Bloomberg, and basically everyone got fired. My point is, setbacks usually prepare us for an even greater comeback if you've learned the lesson it was supposed to teach you. For painter Brian Bailey, his life before painting was filled with these types of setbacks, but he was always smart enough to navigate through them. Brian was born in Prince George's County and raised for a few years in D.C. before finally settling with his family in the Oxon Hill area. He had an idyllic childhood complete with playtime outside and trips to Universal Studios in Florida.
I got a job working at Six Flags. I think my 10th grade year, I think I was 16. I applied when I was 15. They didn't give me the job. They didn't tell me I was excited enough. And probably the fact that I applied to be a lifeguard and I didn't know how to swim. That may be it too, but
that's kind of a requirement.
Very, very ambitious, very ambitious. I wanted to learn how to swim, so I figured if I applied to be a lifeguard, they would teach me. They wasn't on that type of timing, so they turned me down that first year, and then I went back the next year. I applied for the games department. I got the job, and then I think my first day of work, I got written up for having like some change in my pocket because you're not supposed to have cash. And then I went out to like one of my games. I can't remember what game they put me on at first, but I do remember them moving me to this game called Fool the Guesser. And I don't know if you've ever been to Six Flags, but
Fool the Guesser is a long time.
Yeah, Fool the Guesser is a game where you have to, me as the worker, I'm working at this stand with all of these prizes, and I have to guess your age, your weight, or your birth month.
Okay, yeah.
And I have a scale behind me that's supposed to calculate the weight, and that's where I learned my charisma. I learned how to interact with people. Whether they're happy, they're sad, they're mad, this wall that we put up and we don't want to deal with anybody or it's a stranger, you can be walking around pissed off because your food was cold. And I'd be like, you don't like them damn fries. And they'd be like, man, these fries are trash. And I'd turn that shit into $5 that fast. Like, I'll turn it into $5, they'll walk away with a prize and they wouldn't even be tripping about the cold fries anymore. So once I learned that, it was just like, I just started making so much money. The game was $5. I was doing $1,000 days on my own at that one game, like work 3 hours, 3.5 hours, taking a break, come back. I'm at that game. That's my game. They started to promote me. I started to train more people on just like breaking down that wall. Cause like I said, I was a shy kid. I had no intention of talking to anyone for my whole life. I really didn't care to talk to people. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't attractive. So it was like, I wasn't getting no love from the women. I had hair, so I kind of looked like Chicken Little a little bit. So it's like, I'm just staying in my little bubble. I ain't worried about it. If I get a job, I get a job. So very appreciative for Six Flags. Got promoted all the way up to the corporate level, full-time. Not corporate, but full-time at the park. I went from games to food and beverage. And food and beverage, I got promoted to full-time. I was the catering director and full-time. And then after that, it was sales. I went to ticket sales. So when I got into catering, I seen all the sales representatives and stuff like that. They were like, they were the ones booking the events that I was catering for. And I'm like, nah, I ain't about to be here just doing what y'all tell me to do. I need to do the talent. So I got into sales. I did sales for like a year and a half. And then I just, you're not in the park anymore. You come from being here, engaging with the people. And I just lost my passion for it. I kind of just left. I left, no real plan. I sold cars for 3 months, and then I was a woman's shoe stylist at Coach. Mm-hmm. And me just using my charisma, I was just able to just schmooze these older women into buying whatever I wanted them to buy. So they were buying purses, jackets, shoes, the match, boom, out the door. And I was just killing it. And I just fell into like a, not a depression, but I just kind of felt like, all right, what direction are you going in life? Because you worked at Six Flags for 10 years. Mm-hmm. We need to figure this out. And then at this age, I'm probably like 20, I don't even remember. I was probably like 22 years old, 20, yeah, probably 22, 23 years old, maybe even 24. Mm-hmm. So I quit the dealership and I told Coach that my uncle passed away and I need to take some time off. So I got up, I moved to Atlanta, yeah, and I stayed in Atlanta for like a month and a half. It was like 45 days. I just got up one day. The same day I quit the dealership is the day I booked my flight and I flew to Atlanta that night. Wow. So one of my friends lived down there, so I was staying with her. And I was just down there meditating, just getting in tune with myself, because I was a very confident kid and I always knew the answer to everything. I always knew what I had going on because I was working at the park. I had my goals and stuff set up. I never planned for anything outside of Six Flags. So that was my time to get my mental strength together. That way, when I come back home, I wanted to stay, but it was just too slow. Like I said, meditated like a mug and just got it together. When I came back, I got a job at the city of Sea Pleasant. You ever heard of Sea Pleasant?
Mm-mm, no, what's that?
Sea Pleasant is the city that Kevin Durant is from.
Mm, okay.
You know Kevin Durant. You're not a Kevin Durant fan, are you? You were fascinating.
I don't watch sports. I'm not a sports guy. I mean, I got a bunch of manga on my damn bookcase. So
I got you.
Yeah, but I know who Kevin Durant is.
Yeah, so I worked for, I got hired at Sea Pleasant as the project manager of economic development. So basically what I was doing there, I was taking the blighted properties. They had purchased probably 5 to 7 blighted properties. And I just came in as this young, ambitious kid. I just told them in the interview, look, if you want it done, I'm going to get it done. And they're like, well, you've never built a house before. I said, well, how many people in this building has run economic development before? And they were like, okay, we'll give you the job. Like,
oh, so, Mr. Smartass over here.
Exactly, right? So I'm big YouTube university. So yeah. Got in, started cracking the books open and stuff like that. And the books were looking like real crazy. I don't know if you know about government and stuff like that. I'm sure you know where, like, just how funding and stuff is managed is loosely managed. So
yeah.
I kind of brought attention to that in my first week and a half, and they fired me. My second week, they fired me in the worst way too. So, the goal was for me to be the project manager. So right. They named me the project administrator. And I was supposed to get, they were going to pay for me to take my classes to get my certification to be the project manager. So the guy comes in, he's like, yo, I need you to look up the courses. We like what you're doing. Look up the courses on, you know, community college. Yeah, he gave me all that. He sold me too, bro. I was geeking. So look up the courses. I find the courses or whatever. He was like, all right, cool. Print it out. Bring it into the HR manager's office. So I go into the HR manager's office. Bama's like, yeah, we're going to have to let you go. I look at him like,
yo, that's bro, terrible.
Like, bro, super tacky, bro. So I'm like, you know who you fucking with? I'm sitting in the dream like, are you serious right now? And then I'm looking at the HR guy like, bro, do you know he just had me look up the courses online? Like he was about to send me to class for project management. And he's sitting here firing me literally 20 minutes later. And then the HR guy's like, what? You serious? I said, bro, like, what type of time y'all on in here? You know what's going on? Like, you know what I do in this joint? So I'm like, you know what? It's cool. You will get yours. And he's like, is that a threat? I said, nah, bro. I believe in karma. Like, it's cool. Yeah. I ain't tripping. Get up, grab my charger. And he's like, call the security. I'm like, bro, you don't have to call nobody. I'm good off you. Walk up out the joint. It was just so random. Everybody's like, what the hell? Because I'm a good kid. Like, I bond with people. I make connections. I like to get the job done. So when you're in the workplace and that's not the culture and you bring that culture and other people want to have that culture, mm-hmm. I meshed really well with the group of people that was working in there already. So when I left, everybody's calling like, yo, you need to file a grievance. You need to do this. You need to do that. They can't fire you like that. All this stuff I'm not familiar with because I worked at Six Flags. Ain't no need for no grievance. We was having fun, making money, eating chicken tenders all day long. Like it was no worries at that joint, right? So I filed a grievance or whatever, and they called me probably a couple weeks later, and I'm already at an interview to be the district manager with Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
And I'm in a bidding war with Chick-fil-A at the time, and then C. Pleasant is calling me back, and Chick-fil-A's like, we can only pay you. And I'm like, nah. You know what I'm saying? Turning down Chick-fil-A, then I go meet with them. I ask them for some more money at C. Pleasant. They give it to me, and I immediately tell them, like, look, stay out my way. I'm going to stay out your way. I started in July. I got fired in July. I probably didn't come back till the end of August. Mm-hmm. And my birthday is September 6th. So when they hired me back, I went to a community event. And then I told my boss at that moment, I was like, look, I already booked a vacation to go out of town for my birthday. I'm going to Universal Studios. I already booked a vacation to go to Universal Studios. So I'm out of here next week. And he was like, well, you haven't been working. How'd you do that? I said, bro, this money, my money don't never stop. One thing I ain't going to do is be broke. Like, y'all ain't, I'm not tripping over y'all, but y'all ain't going to do me dirty. So I just told him to stay out of the way, and I'm gone. By the time I got back from Universal Studios, he was fired. Like, he was fired.
Yeah. Wait. Was this the guy that fired you before?
The guy that fired me before. He was fired.
Karma.
But guess who's the new the acting director for economic development?
Who? You? Oh, my.
You kid.
You said it. You said it. You said the karma's going to come back to you, my friend.
Bro, it's crazy. It happened super, super fast. So I did that. I ended up, I think I did that for 2 years. I ended up selling, renovating 5 houses. I ended up selling 3 or 4 of those houses. I started the construction on the City Hall and Public Works facility. So I broke ground on that. And one day I got up out of my office and I walk outside of the temporary office we were in. And I caught the mayor talking to, at this point, they had bought in a full-time director or whatever. So I had a full-time director of economic development in there. And the mayor was talking shit about me. Like, he was literally like, Bailey isn't this, Bailey isn't that, Bailey isn't this. So I'm straight to it. Like, yo, let me know what's going on. How you feeling? He was just like, yeah, I got some, you know, that'll run circles around you. And I'm like, what you mean? Like, what you want to do? Like, you want to hire me or something?
They said that to you.
The mayor said that to me. My boss. So the culture is like, it's always pick your battles, right?
Yeah, sure.
I don't care for disrespect. I'm going to find me a job or I'm going to give you some money. Like, I'm not here for the disrespect. And I'm not the one that's going to be slapping people out at work. I ain't trying to pay for no lawyer. Like, that's crazy to me. So when I heard him say that, I just told him straight up, go ahead and hire him. I went and put my 2 weeks in. That was on a Monday. Mind you, it's September again. Like, this is probably September 1st. I put my 2 weeks in on a Monday. He released me on a Wednesday. I'm on vacation on Thursday. Guess where I'm going?
Universal Studios.
Universal Studios. I'm at Universal Studios. Cooling with the fam, like, maxing and relaxing. I ain't tripping. So that day when I caught him talking trash, my brother had called me and he was getting into it. He was renting space at a car shop. He was like, man, I think I'm ready to open up a shop. Let's get it, you know? So I went on vacation from the 5th to the 9th. I got back. I signed the lease on my shop the 29th of September. And my first client was Darius Geis from the Redskins, the running back. And phew,
that's all it took.
Yeah.
Man, that is an amazing, I feel like listening to your story, we just went through like 3 to 4, 5, 6 different whole anime arcs worth of content with
it's
you,
crazy.
Man. Yeah.
Movie is going to be crazy.
the true life Brian Bailey story.
yeah.
Listening to you talk about your life and like your work experience, like your bio on your website says, like, you started your professional career really at like 14, 15, because a lot of people that age, my first job when I was 14, I think I was like 10th or 11th grade or something like that, I pushed carts at the grocery store. So I couldn't even imagine what it would be like to be like 19, 20 years old and then working your way up to the like corporate level of something like Six Flags.
And a lot of people, like, they shit on Six Flags because it seems so kiddie. But think about it like this. I'm going to put it in perspective. I was 17 years old handling millions of dollars of revenue.
Yeah.
Like, from scheduling to forecasting to budgeting to cost of goods to making sure my percentages were at balance. I knew that if you were working this game at this hour and you made this much money and you gave away this many prizes, the numbers were good. And let's say if you didn't make a certain amount of money and this amount of prizes was gonna, somebody steal it. Like, I was learning that at 17 years old. You know what I'm saying? And then dealing with the customer complaints and stuff like that, you're learning this customer and this these interactions with these people at a very young age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's so weird how it works out where you, as the quiet, shy kid, you end up falling into these jobs and these opportunities that's forcing you to get outside your comfort zone. So you get to a certain point where you like, I'm not really about the, you know, the talking and the action and all the craziness mm-hmm. in the workplace, but people they like underestimate you because you just be quiet, you just be chilling, like, you know, not trying to make waves. And then when somebody comes at you and you reply in kind, they're just like, oh, whoa, like
you turn it up and you shock them a little bit. So it's definitely that. I don't even now, I still don't like to talk now because it's so much energy I put into my artwork and stuff like that. Like, when it gets to me, like going to events, I got a good 3 hours in me of conversation. I have a good 3 hours of me interacting with people, and you can ask my circle, like, I'm shutting down. Like, man, look, talk. I'll let them. I can't deal with it right now. Literally.
Nah, I feel that. But yeah, a 3 hour social battery, that sounds about right for me as well. And I wanted to talk about that because going through your biography, like I said, it is truly an amazing story. And you definitely had like a lot of good opportunities for personal and professional growth. But one thing you didn't really talk about much was your art. So when did you first realize that you were artistically inclined? Were you a kid and there was like a specific life experience, or you were older and you were just kind of messing around and was like, oh, I'm bored at work, so let me draw some pictures or something?
When it came to, as it comes to painting, I never really dabbled in the painting outside of like August of last year. Like, this literally just started for me. Mm-hmm. And it started because of the shop was like stressful that last quarter of the year. It was super, super stressful. Like, just maintaining the shop and just dealing with the customer base. It took me to a space where, like, yo, I needed to like relax. And me painting was really like a date night thing. Like, I literally painted the beach on the date night and it felt so good. And I'm like, damn, this looks amazing. Like,
At a sip and paint?
Nah, I was right here in the crib, literally. Oh, okay. Sitting probably in this same spot in the crib. And she had got some little canvases and set up the little paint and sip joint. And we were just painting. And I'm like, damn, it looks good. I'm going to show you later on, but it looks good. And then it just felt like a release. So I just went and bought more canvases and I just kept painting and I just kept doing it. And it just started to feel like that, you know, the first time you smoke weed or something like that, you know what I'm saying? You're like super, super, super on another level. I was just like, wow, this is the release I needed. And then I just started to connect with it. Literally, I started to connect with it.
Okay.
I wish it was like some longstanding, oh, I went to school for this, I studied it, and you know what I'm saying? Because people relate to that a little bit more and they feel like that's the textbook way to go about it. And a lot of people don't like that it's a natural God-given ability, especially when I'm going out here and all these people are showing me so much love and they're appreciating the work. And I tell them I just started in August. They're like, oh, you still got some time to go. But how many people painted at the Grammys, you know?
Yeah, man. I saw that on your social media, on your Instagram. So just to clarify, you've only really been painting and seriously focusing on your art since August of 2022?
Yeah.
That's amazing, man. On your bio or on your website, when you read your bio, it does say though that you are like a mixed media artist. So we've been talking a lot more about painting. What other mediums do you dabble in? And do you feel like going back and recounting your professional career, do you ever remember any instances where like your artistic side jumped out, but you weren't really paying attention to it at the time?
Yeah, it always was natural to me. So at Six Flags, I developed two brands. Like, I developed a brand called Chopsticks, which took place of Panda Express. It was pretty much the same type of thing. We just kind of didn't renew the contract with Panda Express and we opened our own Asian cuisine space. Helped develop the menu, helped develop the designs for the menu boards and stuff like that, just building that brand. And then we had another brand, which was one of the first full bars at a Six Flags park with hard alcohol and stuff like that called Hurricanes. So Hurricanes designed the uniforms, designed the full brand layout and stuff like that. And that was really my first taste of like creative control of, it wasn't even my first taste really, but as far as in the professional setting, me just building those two things and just watching them go from piece to piece to piece to piece to making $300,000 the first 3 months and making the money back from construction the first couple of months. And then everything just tenfold. That was really my first taste of like professional budgeted projects and just seeing, having a timeline of goals and just knocking them all left and right and have everything be on time. And just, I wish I got royalties from those projects because those are very successful projects. And I was very, very young working on those projects.
Yeah.
I was always a creative kid though. Like I was always my older brother made music. So I was always sneaking in his room on his computer, messing with Fruity Loops. I think Fruity Loops back then was like Fruity Loops 6 or Fruity Loops 5 or something like that. And I was always just in there making beats, writing raps, and just always just being creative. And then as I got older, it just kind of got into like fashion and just learning how to match colors and how to not match colors and still make it look good. So it was always this bright, fun energy inside of me. I just didn't have the charisma and the talk piece to match it. And that's what Six Flags did for me. But I feel like I always was a creative. I never really painted though. I always dabbled into like party promoting or like party planning and just little other things outside of just paint on canvas or paint on the wall and stuff like that. There was always something else going on that I was doing to trigger like my artistic part of mm-hmm. my brain and make me feel like I've achieved something creatively, beyond.
And listening to all of that, what I'm noticing or what I'm hearing is you took the opposite route, and frankly, this might have been the better decision or might be the better decision for some people. Honestly, even people like me, a lot of people, they get into their art and their craft first, and then they have to build that business or social muscle in order to go out and network or go out and find those opportunities. But you, as we mentioned before, you had an entire career of building that up. So in a way, while you weren't exposing yourself to it intentionally, just coming into work every day, and especially when we talk about artists, like so many people are like, I don't want a day job. I just want to do my art. But like you're proof of concept that sometimes that day job is what's going to give you those skills to help push you over the edge when it comes time to meld that creative and that business side. So that's amazing. And I want to continue talking about the Brian of today, because we got an extensive look at, you know, your childhood, your growing up, yeah, and your professional career. You're based out of DC currently, and judging by your IG, you're always out and about. So what made you want to move back to the DC area, or did you move back like while you were working at Six Flags or
I left Six Flags. I went and sold cars for a little bit, then I moved to Atlanta.
Yeah.
Atlanta was just they were trying too hard in Atlanta for me. What I had naturally, they tried super, super hard to have. And I didn't like the energy. I didn't like the pace of it. I didn't like how they were so far behind when it came to fashion. Like,
what year were you in Atlanta?
I want to say it was like 2017, because I opened my shop 2019. It may have been 2016, because I came back and I did a year and a half at Sea Pleasant. So it was between 2016 and 2017.
Okay.
Right. And it was just, I don't know, it just wasn't, I wanted to look for a job out there. I just couldn't find the motivation. Like, it wasn't, the people weren't just, it was just a little, not edgy, but it just was outdated for me. Coming from like the DMV area where everything is fast paced, you know, we're up, you know, we're jumping, this is going on right now, and then this is going on. Atlanta's like, and then you got your small social groups that kind of run everything. So it's like,
yeah,
and then your social group would do something and then it goes right back. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know, I just didn't like it.
I kind of understand what you're saying, but I think it's interesting that you're kind of making the point or the argument that basically what I'm hearing you saying is that the DMV, as far as cultural relevancy, is kind of punching above its weight. Is that what you would say?
100%. If we being honest, we set the tone for a lot of things. And I feel like the only fallback we have is that we don't stand on it. We argue with each other before we argue with somebody else about what we've done or what we started, and it doesn't make sense to me. Like, I'm standing on me. Like, you got me effed up. We put these colors on first. We was right, and we was talking that talk first. Like, yeah. Even with the whole New Balance talk, I'm not a crazy New Balance guy, but what are we talking about? Where New Balance is coming from? This is where New Balance started, right here. So it's like, we're not having those Nike boot conversations with New York. We know what Nike boots was for the DMV, and nobody else was wearing Nike boots. Take your Timberlands. And even when Timberlands came with the beef and broccoli and the mac and cheeses, who was really putting it on? Like, we was really putting it on. Nobody really cared about the beef and broccoli and the foam posits. Come on, like, are we serious? Like, the big kicker rugbies, and are we serious right now? Like, it's ridiculous. And that's why I don't like when I see my people, like, in this area put on those, them bell-bottom pants. They like the jeans that they flared out at the bottom. I don't even know what they call them, because it comes from the South, and they see the rappers and stuff from the South wear it. I don't like that type of stuff. I hate it, to be honest, because I know we're so original. And we just feel like we have to mow to everybody else, but all everybody else do is take from us, and they act like they don't even see us, man.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, I continue my conversation with Brian Bailey. I'm Jason V. This is Local Color. Stay with us. I'm Jason V. This is Local Color. And before the break, my guest Brian Bailey spoke on his life in the DMV and why he just couldn't rock with Atlanta. As we continue our talk, we get into the art and business of being an artist in the DMV.
I want to talk more about your art, especially like the art that you're sitting right behind. It's very vibrant. It has those bold brush strokes. And I see like a few little details, like the number 4, you know, the love. And then I think on one of them, I saw like that was just from my mouse. Anyway, I want to talk about the technique behind your art. Like I said, it's very vibrant. And you've mentioned it before. You say that you have a lot of energy, and I can tell in these pieces, there's a lot of energy in your art. But is putting energy into a painting or a piece, is it just bright colors, or do you think it's something more?
I really think it's just me. I've been trying to describe it for like the past 7 months, but it's very hard for me to describe it, because if I feel like doing it, I'm gonna do it. And I don't even know how many pieces I have, but I haven't missed on a piece yet. And it's literally just how I'm feeling in that moment, or how I'm feeling over the past 2 days. It's literally just like how I'm feeling, because before I had this style, I was doing like drip paint and dripping the paint on the canvas and just letting it roll side to side. And people loved that, which was cool. All right, it's cute. I wasn't feeling it as much as I feel when I cook up a piece like this. This is my first piece of this style. The curiosity in this joint, you know what I'm saying? Like, and you can see how relaxed this piece is compared to all of my pieces, because I'm literally trying to figure it out. And I remember laying the orange base with this little pinkish brownish base, and then throwing this blue on here, and then be like, yeah, we got it. We got it. Let's go crazy. You know what I'm saying? And then to finish it off with like the black oil pastels, and just give it that strength. It's like, it's no better way to end it off in something black. You know what I'm saying? That's what I call the true, like, it's black power, essentially. Like, it's very hard to explain, because it really just comes from the inside. Like, I wish I could just do an x-ray and reach inside and just see where it pours from, but I just think it comes from like the years and years and years of my creative ability and not being able to like express myself on my own, because I always worked on everybody else's project. Mm-hmm. This right now, as of August of last year, this is me. Like, my nickname used to be Low Daddy. I used to wear polo everywhere, and the girls used to call me Daddy, so it was just Low Daddy. When August came around, I started painting, and it started moving like that, bro. It's Brian Bailey. Like, let's go with the birth name. We ain't gonna let that fail. Like, ain't no running away from that. Just, I don't know, man. I feel like it's a God-given gift, and I'm just appreciative to be able to express myself for myself and have people love it and people connect with it and people just feel it. Like, I have strangers when I'm at Home Depot buying paint, and they're like, yo, what are you doing with all this paint? And I tell them I'm a painter, and then I open up my iPad, and people literally just sit there and start crying like, yo, I feel this. Like, what's from the iPad? And then I have people that come into my studio apartment and they're like, yo, the energy in here is crazy. And I, you know, it's just like, it just kind of radiates. It radiates. Yeah. And I have strangers, literally, they'll be like, yo, I've been following you for years and I know that this is your thing. And I would literally just break down in tears because it really feels that way. Like, it's no other explanation about it. It's no, I don't know. I have the slightest idea, Brody. It's just something that God gave to me. And he was like, bro, do your thing. Like, take it and go. It's scary because in my head, I'm reckoning like, yo, what's next after this? Because I know this may get tiring, but I'm going to keep doing this. As long as it continues to feel good, I'm going to keep doing it until God tells me to do something else with this artwork and stuff like that. So
I think it's great, amazing, though, that you are able to say, look, I can't explain to you what it is. I can only show you, because I think that's what art ends up being a lot of the time. Like, artists can sit there and explain to you the concept of a painting or why they wanted to do it, but at the end of the day, yeah, like I can't explain it. I can only just show you what's coming out of me. So I think that's really beautiful, honestly.
I think that's what I bring to it as well, because it's like there's so much concept and there's so much story to be sold, right? And I think that's what the art world kind of feeds on, like, oh, who has the best story, right? But I just told you about my life for 25 minutes, and you're like, what the heck? And then I told you I just started painting in August. You're like, okay, this kid has some type of, there's something going on in this kid. So it's like, I don't have that broken childhood story. You know what I'm saying? I haven't been to therapy to break down my traumas yet. So maybe this is just me channeling whatever I have inside of me, this is just me channeling it and putting it on the canvas. And maybe when I do go to therapy, it'll turn it up even more, because I feel like I'm at a 75% right now. So never know.
It could really help you with that. But as you were saying, for now, the pieces look amazing. The fact that you got started with this in August, I feel like will make this next question that much more important or like effective to ask. What was it like building up your art and your brand to a level that allowed you to have representation? Like we said in the beginning, you know, shout out to Jasmine for putting this all together. But at what point in your art career did somebody reach out to you and say, hey, your stuff is great, we want to represent you? And what advice would you give to other creatives who want to be at your level?
That's a good question. Me personally, my blessings come from my connections. Like, I grew up in the club scene. I grew up popular. So for me to be painting, it's like the general public, or like the people that I grew up around and the people that know of me, they've been waiting for this moment to support something that I had for my own. You know what I'm saying? They could communicate to me about. It's not me talking about somebody else. It's not me referencing somebody else. This is me referencing me and my artwork. My publicist and her team, Nia Rice, I've known Nia for almost 10 years. Nia's talked me through my problems. I've talked Nia through her problems. And when I showed her my artwork, she was like, nah, let's take this to the moon. Like, instantly. It wasn't even like, I was like, yo, Nia, what's been going on? She told me what she had going on. I said, man, I've been painting. And I showed her some joints, and she was like, nah, this is it. Next thing you know, I'm at Art Basel at Diddy House.
Oh, wow.
Off the strength of Nia. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I always tell people to just be respectful to people. You never know who you'll meet. Like, and do it with genuine intention. Like, just be nice to people because you can be nice to people. People walk around with this chip on their shoulder, and you're walking around with the attitude. Somebody's attitude is going to match your attitude one day, and I'm sure if you end up on the wrong end of that stick, you'll question the way you're walking around. Just correct it now and just be nice to people. Like, I hate like a Debbie Downer or somebody that's just like always in a bad mood or trying to drain somebody's energy and stuff like that. So I just try to be the light in the room for everybody. I try to speak to everybody. I try to be respectful to everybody until they show me otherwise. Like, I'm not the one that's going to sit here and cuss you out, and especially a stranger. Like, everybody's carrying something today. So I'm not here to argue with anybody or nothing like that. If your energy is off, I'll go to the other corner of the room, or I'll go talk to somebody else. But just be respectful to everybody. meet people, be receptive to people, learn people. I read a book. I applied for a job back in the day, and they told me I didn't get the job because I didn't know how to present myself and listen to people. And then the guy told me to read this book by Dale Carnegie. It's called How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yep.
Book changed my life, bro.
Yeah, I read
changed
it.
Changed my life.
I think this is a little bit of a history for me here. I got let go from a job, and they're like, we'll give you the last 3 weeks because we need your help to finish up this project. And I said, okay, that's fine, because I needed the money as well. Mm-hmm. And kind of similar to you, I was going on this own journey of self-discovery where I grew up, you know, I was like the shy kid, the quiet kid. I was good with school, but yeah, honestly, I feel like the more that I listen to you talk, the more I can kind of identify with your story. But anyway, so I got fired. I was looking at stuff on self-improvement, and they said, you know, of course, like 48 laws of power and mm-hmm. stuff like
the
that.
The generic, you know, the one that everybody get.
Right. And then they talked to me. They said, how to win friends and influence people. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm getting fired from this place anyway, so I'm going to print out that entire book on their printer. And I printed it out, and then I started reading it, and yeah, that book definitely helped bring me into my own as well. So I can appreciate another a reader of that really timeless classic.
That was the only, outside of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, that was the only book I've read cover to cover. Like,
you didn't read the other Harry Potters? You just read the,
nah.
the why that one? That
My mom bought me that joint. It's not like she bought it because I like Harry Potter. I had no idea what Harry Potter was, but she seen the line outside the bookstore. She jumped in the line. She got whatever they want, whatever they were going to get, and she bought it home one day. It was a very good book. But yeah, reading that joint, it really put in perspective, like, just listen to people. And if y'all have something in common, then talk about what y'all have in common. Don't talk about what you don't like or what, you know what I'm saying? Just really listen and be respective and be respectful to people, and they'll love you genuinely, and you'll grow to love them genuinely as well. You know what I'm saying? It just helped me really just be able to engage with people in a more respectful manner, because I was an arrogant kid. Once I was making all that money at Six Flags and nobody really was doing the numbers that I was arrogant. Like, oh, you can't tell me nothing. I know what the hell is going on. I know what I can do. Like, what y'all gonna do without me? And that's how I lived my life for those years until I got into like a corporate professional level at Marriott. I never mm-hmm. talked about Marriott, but I did that for a couple of years. And then they told me to apply for a job and they didn't give it to me. And that was the first time I was ever really like turned down. And it just turned me up. It turned me up another level. Like, that was in between my Six Flags years and becoming like full-time at Six Flags or full-time at Marriott. I kind of chose a Six Flags over Marriott. Which was crazy, but it all just adds to the story. So
yeah, for sure,
I was
for sure.
A lot of money.
After you were given that advice on how creatives can take themselves to the next level, and the fact that you were able to get some representation through your networking and just people that you knew, is it your publicist or that team that will find those events for you and say, hey, they're doing this event at this day, you got to go out? Or are you kind of lurking on the internet or on social media looking for events to take yourself to show your art and to do more of that networking?
It's both. It's both, honestly. You can't, in this world, there's events happening every single day. So even though you have a team, you can't be lazy. Like, I just ran down a list of events to my team the other day, and they're like, wow, that's amazing. Wow, that's crazy. Wow, this is that there. But just keeping them in the loop of what I have going on this side of town, because they're on the other side of the country. Mm-hmm. So it's both, man. I'm very appreciative of Nia in our friendship and how she understands. Like, we had scheduled a South by Southwest event, right? I have this concept that I'm rolling out, and Nia was like, we can do it at South by Southwest. I could lock in the venue. I could lock in the sponsorship, you know, let's go. Ball is rolling. My mental batteries, as we're planning, my mental battery is draining, right? Literally. So we're getting like, I think it's like a week or 2 weeks before. And I'm on the phone with Nia like, man, I don't know if I could do this. Like, I don't know if I have the bandwidth right now to do this. Mm-hmm. And I think I had just came from California in the Grammys, and it was something about being away from home. Same way I felt at Art Basel. When I left home and I just experienced the culture and how receptive everybody was to it and how there was so much to do. And then I just come home. You don't have that same feeling as you do when you're out of town and you're just getting showered with love. Every single day you walk out the house, you're getting showered with creative love. And my battery was draining here. Like I just wasn't feeling it. I wanted to focus on continuing to build myself up in the art world here and get my mental. I'm still grieving my grandfather's death. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I had a lot going on mentally, and I just told Nia, like, look, I don't think I can do it. And she was on fire. Like, she was on fire. And I get it, because it's like,
that's an opportunity.
That's a very big opportunity, and it takes a lot of planning out of people's days to make that happen. So Me being the upstanding human being I am, I say, look, Nia, I'm going to call the venues. I'm going to call whoever you need me to call, and I'm going to talk to them directly. Because, again, how to win friends and influence people, you have to be straightforward and you have to be honest. So I called the guy with the venue. I told him what I had going on. I told him why I wanted to cancel the event, and he was completely understanding. Whatever you need, Brian, let me know and reach out. I have some people in Baltimore. If you want to link up with them, I could connect you with them, and we could always do the event next year. No pressure. I've been where you're at. Take your time.
Yeah.
I needed that at that point. You know what I'm saying? I'm somewhat depressed, but I'm in a creative space to where, like, I know this is what it's about. You know what I'm saying? So I get off that phone call with him. I let Nia know that we're good. It's okay to cancel it. She's fired up, of course, but I'm painting after that. So it's just like, it's, you got to do the work on both ends. You let your team work and you work as well. And let your team knows, like, what's right and what's wrong. I had an interview that I was going to do, and I brought it up to my team, and they were like, nah, you ain't doing that. Don't do that joint. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, if you want to sit around and wait for somebody else to give you opportunity, you're already shooting yourself in the foot, because there's so much going on in this 75-mile radius of an area. And if you're just sitting down, it makes no sense. And then we have the internet as well. Like I told you yesterday, at 4 o'clock, I have my intern on the way here now to help me load up my paintings, since I'm so disabled. He's about to load up a couple of paintings, and I'm doing a photo shoot with a clothing brand from Italy. They flew some pieces out here to meet with a gallery owner out here, and I'm taking some of my paintings to hang up in the gallery, and I'm gonna be the feature artist in the lookbook for their spring collection. Just working constantly, just working on the internet, working in person, just taking those opportunities to magnify what you're already doing and doing it. Like, we can always say, like, oh, this person is coming to town. All right, cool. I'm going to get them. I'm going to create something for them that will last and they will feel good about. Like, I'm very big on, like, gifting, because it's like, bro, you deserve this. Like, huh, take it. You deserve this. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I don't know. I like to take it to the next level. Literally, I like to take it to the next level. So as hard as they're going to work, I'm going to work harder. Nia and the team has amazing connections. I just have to be able to step in front of them and let them connection know why you got to rock with Nia and them from now on, because they rocking with me.
There you go. What is First Sundays?
First Sundays is a project I was brought on to help curate, like, the art and the culture on my friend Lee, another friend I've known over the years, and we've worked on projects. She's a creative. She loves, like, crafting. She loves arts. She loves bringing people together for a good time. She has her own promotion company. She does weekly parties. She's just out here on the scene as much as anybody else. And we've always connected. I used to call her, like, my Trap Martha Stewart, because, like, she would go to apartment buildings and do the pumpkin painting with the families and, like, the little craft events that, like, your apartment would do community events. She would be that young lady right there doing those community events. And I would go to those events with her because we were just so cool. And it's like, we always thought of, like, what could we do? What could we do? What is our gift to this area? And this area right now is kind of like, it's kind of mellowing out, because at first we had Go-Go. Go-Go was the thing. There was always a Go-Go promoter. They were doing parties, this, this, that, and the third. And now Go-Go is kind of like, they have their solid parties and that's it. The club is kind of just like, the artists come to town, they promote the club, That's it, right? There's no real experiences outside of my homie Reggie. He does like this thing called Sneaky Link. And Sneaky Link is like one of the major strip clubs that's shut down in DC for real, called Stadium. Stadium isn't what Stadium used to be, right?
Yeah.
Reggie was like one of the lead promoters at Stadium. And basically, Reggie created his own rendition of what that was and called it Sneaky Link. So he would rent warehouse space and host parties and bring the dancers out and have the cash for people to cash out for and stuff like that. And it's amazing because it's like, essentially, we are the culture. All of these club owners and everything like that, they see the dollar signs, and we really just want to enjoy the culture. But now we're starting to be the culture and see the dollar sign.
Mm-hmm.
So we're able to create these things and do them on our own now. And with First Sundays, it's like, hey, I'm in the art world. The art world loves me. I used to be in the club world. Lee's in the club world now. The club world loves her, and they love us. Let's bring them together. And when I say we hosted an event last Sunday, Like, you would have thought it was somebody's birthday party, or you would have thought it was like a Grammy weekend, bro. It was that. I'm lost for words because it was like, it was that. The first Sunday I was at the Grammy weekend, so I couldn't really put my hands on it. But this time around,
yeah,
we knocked it out the park, man. It was so surreal to just have. And then it was down at the wharf and people were just coming by. We had the art gallery there. I had a little corner where I put some of my artwork up. We set up this experience to where you could taste the event, you could see the event, and you could feel the event. So we had interactive exhibits where, like, you could sit at a teacup table. It was a floral-themed party, so we had a flower wall with First Sundays on it where you could take pictures in front of. You had my little corner over there where it was a teacup setting, and you could sit down at the teacup table and, you know, clink the teacups, take a picture. And then you had the art gallery where we had a tandem bicycle that we painted pink, and we put the cherry blossoms over, and we just had we had a floral girl doing flowers in the basket. And then we had a girl over there in the corner selling flowers. It was just, and then we had the floral drinks at the bar. It was just an amazing event. And at the end of the night, they shot fireworks at the wharf. And I'm talking about the view. I'm going to send you the view on Instagram. The view from the venue, it was all open. Like, the windows were all open. You could see out. And it's a bridge that goes across the wharf to, I believe, Virginia. And the sun setting on that joint, the fireworks in the air, the energy in the room, people were just showering us like, yo, we really needed this. This was amazing. And it's a thing now. First Sundays will be every first Sunday. We want to provide you a vibe until we get to a festival.
Listening to you talk about it, I pulled up my calendar. I'm like, when is the next first? I was like, I'm going to go next Sunday. And I'm like, yo, no,
the 7th of May.
It has to be the first Sunday. So that sounds amazing, man. So I'm going to let you get out of here. I have to say, man, I had all these questions lined out for you, and I'm not going to lie, for a while I was just like, this guy's all over the place. Like, it's hard for me to keep up, but I appreciate the organic nature of this conversation that we've had. So before I let you go, what's coming up next for you besides the next first Sunday? And where can somebody go if they want to purchase your art, if your art is for sale?
If it's for sale, right? I'm very selective on who I let get my pieces and stuff like that. I've sold 2 original pieces for a nice number, but it's a connection thing. I have to connect with the buyer. People see art as like an investment opportunity. I see art as like an energy thing. My art has to make you feel some type of way. You have to appreciate it on a certain level to want to get it. Like, I have to talk to you about it. Until I get to that point where I'm just in the factory cranking out pieces and this is that and the third, like, right now these pieces mean so much to me, I don't want to let them go. It's very hard for me to sell a piece. I'm working on the bar in 8th Street. It's called Ella Grace. I'm transforming that bar into like a hub of just my artwork. The owner came to me. He said, look, I want you to do your thing here. Just add this, that to it. So I've done the brunch patio. I've done the inside hallway. Hopefully if my ankle is feeling better this weekend, I'll be able to go out and paint the main bar area. And then I'm going to hang up a bunch of my larger pieces. Like you see the 60 by 48. I'll be hanging those up in the upstairs lounge area. And then I'm going to do the front facing of the whole bar. And that'll just be right there on 8th Street. It's one of the most popular party streets in the District of Columbia. And that'll be like my first big, big project. Outside of that, I'm just working on, I want to say the brand, but I am me. So it's not like I have to keep building me. It's just more so being outside and letting people experience this, because it's a blessing to connect with people and they feel it organically. You know what I'm saying? Like just having my energy exude, if that's a word, to somebody and they're like, yo, this kid is amazing. Yeah, he's 6 foot, 225 pounds, broad shoulders and dreadlocks, but this is a different type of energy that I'm giving, and I just want to make sure everyone experiences it. So that's my main focus now, is just making sure I can give my energy and working with the kids, man. It's a tough time outside right now for the kids. That's really it for me, just working with those kids, because I don't have any kids yet, and I can't raise kids right now the way the world is going. It's very, very scary. So working with the kids to change their perspective on life and to just show them that there's better ways to express yourself, whether it be art, whether it be photos, whether it be computer technology, whether it be just getting a job and learning how to be interactive with people, because we lead so much with hate nowadays. It's trickling down to the kids. And I said this in the grant. I put into a video grant the other day. I said, will we always thought the perception was, it's becoming the reality. Like, we thought that the kids didn't have any sense. They weren't thinking. These kids really aren't thinking right now. They really don't have any clue when it comes to being respectful. They aren't being taught to be respectful first. So it's like the disrespect, when I talk to these teachers and the kids are in there doing drugs and just being ridiculous. I didn't even know that 12-year-olds had a vaping problem. We have to grab them and we have to let them be kids, because when I was 12-year-old, I was outside on my Razor scooter in my mongoose having fun skateboarding in the pool at the neighborhood park when it was drained. You know what I'm saying? Doing that type of mischievous stuff. I wasn't out here having babies
doing
and
drugs,
smoking weed and toting guns and robbing football players. Like,
yeah,
we got to make it. We got to start to make it make sense. We have to put responsibility on our back, because there's a lot of people that aren't doing the work that should be doing the work. And a person like me, I'm not made of money. So all of my crafts and all of my costs that's going into these schools, either the school is providing it, which don't have a lot of money, or I'm providing it and I'm not charging for it. So it's like, I encourage everyone to take a time out of their week, a time out of their month, and please just connect with the kids, because they are receptive to it and they need it. They need it more than anything. Literally, they need it more than anything.
Word. Well, that's a great note to end on.
Thank you.
And getting back to your point really quick before I let you go, getting back to your point of just having you being out in those places and wanting people to just experience the energy that you have, I can tell you we're talking digitally and I can feel the energy. So I think you're well on your way to accomplishing your goal, Ryan Bailey. I like the nickname Low Daddy, but you know, you
say it was straight to it. It was like D-A-D-D-E-E. That's how different I was. I couldn't put D-A-D-D-Y. It's like everybody can. I ain't got no kids. I ain't nobody daddy. Like, it's not D-A-D-D-E-E type of joint. But to your point, I was very adamant on coming to the studio, because they were like, oh, you could do it on Zoom. And I'm like, nah, I need to go in the studio, because the energy is different in studio. Like, it's just weird, but it's so well-deserving. I'm blessed. I can't even elaborate on it. It's just a blessing to be able to be myself and share it, because a lot of people can't be themselves. And it sucks, because I talk to these people every day. I talk to portrait artists every day that want to do abstract art and want to do what I do. And they have it, but they're stuck in this portrait artist world because that's what's paying the bills for them. So I pray for them and I just tell them to just jump off that bridge and not jump off that bridge.
No, I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
To do what they want to do, because my goal is to teach everybody that internal happiness. Once you find that internal happiness, life becomes that much easier. It's not about the wealth and it's not about the show and tell. You will be the walking show and tell because you'll be able to walk in the room, be yourself, walk out that room, be yourself, go to sleep yourself, wake up yourself, and just enjoy being you. I can be alone because I enjoy myself. If I get married to myself, don't be surprised that I'm at a wedding at the altar going back and forth, reading myself my vows. Like, I love you, bro, man. I love you too, cuz. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, some shit like that. But, man, I appreciate it for sure. It was a great conversation. I appreciate the energy. I appreciate the hunger. I appreciate the organization, too. And I appreciate you being able to take my call yesterday and say, look, I can't make it. This is that going on in the third. And being able to just reschedule to this morning. I'm not even a morning person, but I know if I'm somewhat like, if I cause a rift in somebody's day, I have to be punctual about people's time. So I appreciate you being receptive to that because a lot of people be like, nah, don't worry about it.
So yeah, of course, man. Of course, man. Well, like I said, I'll let you get out of here. Mr. Brian Bailey, thanks so much for the opportunity to talk with you.
Jay Money, thank you.
That was artist and painter Brian Bailey. Check him out on IG at Brian Bailey Art. That's Brian with an I. Thanks for listening to today's episode of Local Color. The podcast is hosted and produced by me, Jason V. The podcast is distributed by Your Public Studios. New episodes of Local Color will be released the second and fourth Wednesday of each month. Please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review. Learn more about Local Color at wypr.org.